Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
On tonight's episode, we'll be discussing protection magic.
We'll look at protecting yourself and others with magic and have a look at talismans as well. And hello, Lane.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing pretty good.
Happy New Year. Oh, my goodness.
I'm knocking over Lane. Hands, too.
We've got a witch down. A witch down. So, Happy New Year.
To you, too.
Excellent. So, our subject tonight is protection magic.
Yes.
Do you want to kind of discuss why... You sort of came up with this idea, and I think it's a really excellent idea. Do you want to kind of talk about where the idea came from?
Sure. Well, as you guys know, I recently had a baby, and she is here with me actually. So, if you hear any noises, you know, little coos or whatever, she's here. But we had an incident where she choked, and we ended up calling 911 and going to the ER just to make sure she was okay, that no liquid got into her lungs or anything like that. And obviously everything turned out to be okay, but it really got me thinking on protection magic and... the things we do as parents just of the mundane to protect our children, and also protection magic of not only other people, you know, because we obviously want to protect our kids, but, you know, are we going to protect our significant others and animals and things of that nature and also ourselves. So I just thought that would be an interesting topic to touch on, because it's one we haven't really discussed on its own. It's one we've kind of touched on. Home magic, I think we've done at one point. I mean, home protection.
Yeah, we were doing sort of spring cleaning type stuff that got rolled into it.
Right.
But yeah, we haven't really done like personal stuff. So.
Yeah. So I thought that would be cool to talk about.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I think we're going to look at talismans eventually, and I'm sure that'll come up. But I think, you know, starting off, you know, probably just the really simple stuff. I know, you know, one of the things that I did for a long time with our kids was I would, you know, sort of say a little prayer over them
mm-hmm.
every night, and then sort of, you know, make a little mark on them with my thumb
mm-hmm.
as just a sort of, you know, notion of protection while they sleep.
Mm-hmm. Did you make a cross on them, or?
I did. A little even-armed cross,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, the Catholic in me surfacing. But I mean, that's a protective sigil that has lots of history, so.
Yeah.
So I ain't ashamed. and it's, you know, that's kind of the basic thing that I started off with. And, you know, I've done a lot of other things. There's a lot more incorporated, but that's probably the thing that was the most stable for the longest in terms of protection magic. And it's interesting because, you know, we think of vulnerability, and sleep is automatically the first place where I
feel. Exactly. I was about to say that is so true from day one because, I mean, I don't know about other parts of the world, but here in the U.S., before sending you home, they will really, really hammer it home about SIDS
mm-hmm.
and safe sleeping practices. And, I mean, I think it really is meant to terrify you a little bit in order to kind of keep you vigilant. I remember the first night she slept more than 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I had always set an alarm for 4 hours or so I could get her up to eat when she was,
right.
I mean, this is newborn first week. And I think it was like the fifth day she ended up sleeping past my alarm. And I just flew out of bed, you know, to check on her. It was just like, oh God, is she breathing? So yeah, sleep is a big one. Just the physical side of it to begin with, but then I think also with dreams and things like that as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's when you're most vulnerable, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a reason that people are afraid of the dark.
Right.
And you know, that certainly plays into it. And it's interesting, you know, as my kids have gotten older, the, you know, that sort of, like, really once they're able to get out of bed by themselves, mm-hmm. for me, the nighttime protection, it's a little more diminished, and I sort of put it more on them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it's not like I'm asking them to go out and do a lesser vanishing ritual of the pentagram every time they think they see a scary shadow. But no, funnily, actually something my son has had, my son is very nervous. He's a nervous individual. He's, you know, afraid of a lot of things. And the dark is one of them. And
he seems kind of suggestible.
He is. And I, you know, to be fair, I've allowed him to be exposed to a lot of, not horror, but, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas, and he was really into for a while. And,
mm-hmm.
and during the daylight hours, he thinks it's all fascinating, but at night it sort of resurfaces.
I feel him. That's exactly how I am.
Yeah. And I mean, and like one of the things he's the most terrified of right now is a rhinoceros.
Oh, that's odd.
Well, because there's this book and movie and play, James and the Giant Peach.
I was about to say that movie, the rhino is scary in that.
It is, and we saw that when we were last visiting some family, we happened to get to go see a children's production play version of that.
Oh, neat.
And they had a fairly scary rhino in it as well. It was a projected image, but it was scary enough, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so then with the movie, and then, and that's actually one of the few Roald Dahl books I don't think I've read to him yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, you know, we read The Witches, and he loves that book.
Mm-hmm.
We've read that one a couple times now. But that one, for some reason, the rhino terrifies him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's really funny. There's this, do you remember Professor Lupin's solution to dealing with
chocolate? Bothers?
Well, no, chocolate helps too, but it's the ridiculous spell.
Ah, yes.
So, and not to say that you should, you know, that you know, we're bucking tradition and doing pop culture magic, but I'm bucking tradition and doing some pop culture magic here. And so I started teaching him about, you know, okay, well, I'm sure the rhino scares you when you first think about the rhino. What would it look like if that rhino was riding a bicycle? And he just burst out laughing. We have not had a problem with the rhino since.
Nice.
And now every time he brings up something new, I mean, there's, you know, there's lots of fears. He has fears of zombie faces and things.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, imagine him wearing big flowery hats.
Right.
And clown noses. And, like, so we sort of play through this idea of, like, he can do this himself. He just has to take control of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's protection magic. It's more protection psychology. But,
I like it.
But it ties in a little bit, I think. So what about you? Are you feeling, like, have you found anything that you like to do, any little rituals for protecting for your wee one?
Not really. That's why I kind of wanted to ask you about what you did. But I like what the words you just used, which is ritual, because mm-hmm. even, like the putting her to bed, that, you know, that you create this very strict routine in order to help them go to sleep when they're transitioning to sleeping all night. And mm-hmm. it becomes a little bit of a ritual. And I just think that parallel is interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Do you feel like you're developing a set of rituals?
I mean, nothing magical per se. Just, you know, you take a bath every single time, and then, you know, read and eat, and then it's bed, and just the repetitiveness of it, and it starts to turn into a ritual. I don't know. I don't know what I'm even trying to say with it. I just think it's interesting.
No, I mean, I think you're right on the right track. I mean, if you think about, you know, I mean, there are ritual baths that we find in lots of magical traditions, mm-hmm. particularly Hoodoo, you know, and I'm not saying that you're, you know, adding herbal essences and things like that to your, you know, wee one's bath, but you're cleansing off anything, any accumulated, mostly mess from the day,
mm-hmm.
but in some ways you're also you know, cleansing off any stresses.
It really helps her calm down. That's the main reason we do it. She doesn't get too dirty. You know, she doesn't need a bath every single night, but we give it to her anyway because it helps calm her down.
Yeah.
She's definitely a little water baby.
Oh. That's
loves
awesome.
It. Yeah.
There she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. She knows we're talking about her.
So, anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, at some point, you know, we started using that lavender-scented bath, the baby bath. You know, that helps calm them, but it also, you know, gives them good dreams in some ways. It's supposed to help with that. I know one of the things I did fairly early was I would anoint their bedposts, not regularly, but every once in a while with sweet dream oil, which I actually got a vial of that from Mrs. Oddly. I don't know if we've mentioned her on the show or not, but if we haven't, we should.
She's, I think we have, because she did those little dolls of us, didn't she?
Oh, the dolls, yes, the dolls, the Pagan Podkin dolls, that's right. So, yeah, so I'd use some of her sweet dream oil or you know, at some point I started putting little salt circles around their beds, too, just in case. But I did that as part of the regular cleaning. Trying to think what else. You know, I used to have a like an evil eye bead. That's something we haven't talked about. But yeah, I would hang an evil eye bead in their window to redirect the evil eye.
Yeah. Didn't you have a God's eye on their closet door?
Yes, I had a broom hanging on the back of their main door, and I had a God's eye hanging on another door, and the God's eye was a God's eye my mom had picked up at one point. And those are protective as well. Yeah, there's a lot of like talismanic stuff that goes on with protecting kids.
Yeah.
And you know, with the evil eye, that's a whole category of childhood protection, just because, you know, that's usually directed at children, or they're, you know, it's one of those things that people, that's a lot of what they're protecting when they do those evil eye talismans are children, because children are so susceptible.
Why is that?
I guess just the innocence.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, they talk about children being the ones who can hear angels and, you know, have, you know, fairy friends and can... Oh, that's so cute. Every time.
That's my nom-nom sound.
It is. Oh, it's adorable. So yeah, there's a lot of, like, the little protective talismans that I put around, and you know, there's that nursery rhymes, the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John bless the bed that I lie on, four posts around my bed, four angels around my head.
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, and it's weird because, like, I wouldn't call on necessarily the gospel writers as protective,
right?
But like, I feel like I'm summoning like archangels of protection in a way when I do that. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. It's, you know, it may just be a nice nursery rhyme of protection, but I just think it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's little prayers that we learn too. Like, you know, now I lay me down to sleep, which is actually kind of morbid when you,
that's quite morbid.
I've never cared for that, but it's interesting that we teach our children that, or not we, but a lot of people do, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very, I don't know. It's very pervasive, I think.
Yeah.
That one is. And I guess it, you know, stems from a time period where child mortality is much more significant.
That's true.
But yeah, like with, you know, with the personal, I mean, so when you're thinking about protecting your child. Do you ever extend that kind of protection to anyone else?
Yeah, like, that's something else I wanted to touch on is, I guess, when you're protecting your home, you know, by extension, you're protecting your family. Mm-hmm. And then I've personally never really done it, but I can definitely see protecting, you know, an older or an aging parent. I worry about my mom especially, you know, because she's by herself, and, you know, because we're all moved out and everything, and Yeah, I can see doing something for her, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, and that gets at that, you know, a lot of people will say don't do spell work for people if they don't know about it, but mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, neither of us seem to abide by that anyway.
I know, I used to believe that, but it's kind of, my feelings on it have kind of changed / evolved as I've gotten older.
Yeah, it's all my corrupting influence.
It really is.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, especially if you're doing protection, I mean, I think some people would say healing work as well.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of gray and fuzzy line drawing there. So, mm-hmm. So I have no problem with doing protection. I know when my wife was pregnant, I would do plenty of stuff to protect her. That she didn't know about. There was a magical talisman hiding under her mattress for like 6 or 9 months.
That's awesome. Oh man. So. One another thing that I had growing up until I don't know, probably till I left for college, I had a dream catcher
mm-hmm.
for the longest time. And I don't think those are incredibly common, but yeah, I don't know. I always liked the imagery and the, I guess, significance of that. So that might be one thing that I do for her.
Yeah. Yeah, and I yeah, I mean, I'm very cautious about Not dream catchers. Well, yeah, dream catcher. I'm only cautious about dream catchers because of the risk of cultural appropriation. Like, mm-hmm. like I don't want to buy one that was like made in China. Which is,
yeah,
I know it's a dumb thing, but like
no, we got ours from a. I don't want to get too much into like our location. I know that sounds stupid, but
right, but
close by. I don't think reservation is the right word, but a close by tribe.
Right, it's your tribal lands area.
Yes, so.
Right.
I didn't. I don't feel bad about having it, I guess.
No, and I think like that's just it. Is like if you're getting it, if the money is going to the tribe,
mm-hmm.
and it, you know, then in that situation, I'm like, meh, that's fine.
Right.
I kind of wish I had one in that situation. So.
Right.
So and that's why I'm actually I was okay with the God's Eye as well as it was. Made in the Southwest by a native craftsperson, and my mom picked it up on a trip out there. So I was very okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So not that this is the show about cultural appropriation. That's not really the direction we're going. But
no, I mean, wait.
but you know, like you know, would I put up a mezuzah to protect my home or family? Probably not, because it's not a tradition that I am bound to.
Right.
Or that I fully understand. So, all that is to say, like I think it's you know different structure, different folks, and they have to find something that works from their background, as we often say
mm-hmm.
on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some that I think are kind of universal. I mean, those blue beads. I hate to say that they're universal, but they really have sort of spread out.
Yeah.
So you can do those. And we'll get into some of the talismans, I think, in a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But, what's some other... Oh, one thing that you had mentioned that I think is really fascinating is the idea of names as a protective force.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know a lot of... well, maybe not a lot, but, you know, I've heard this kind of idea of keeping your name... As secret as you can, I guess, because it you know, it holds your power, and the more people who know it, you know, the more they can have power over you. I know some spells we've done, we've definitely, or in, that I've done, or that you've helped with, or whatever, have definitely used the person's name, you know, all the better if you know the middle name, things like that, and... Also, you know, you hear from in Christianity, or at least in Catholicism, if you know the name of a demon, then you can command it and you can have control over it.
Right, yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of ceremonial magic that's based on that mm-hmm. as well. So, yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, barring getting somebody's hair out of their hairbrush or, you know, getting something that's really, really personally connected to them at a physical level, the closest you can get to them is having their name.
Yeah, you know? That was really important to me when naming my child. I even feel awkward talking about it just because I don't want people to be like insanely curious or anything. But, you know, my first name is really, really common. Like you can pretty much tell exactly what decade I was born in. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I didn't want that for her because I've never felt that connected to it. It never felt like mine. It never felt special. And mm-hmm. I think part of it, now that I'm thinking about it, is it didn't feel like it held any significance or, you know, I'm doing air quotes, any power.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want that for her. I chose something that is not on the top 100 of, you know, the Social Security naming list that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want her to be referred to as first name, last initial, like I was
mm-hmm.
all through school, because there were three other girls with the same name.
Right.
And I, you know, there's, and you get that a lot with every generation, you know, it, but as like the internet has become more pervasive, as we hear more names and, we come into contact with, you know, and then like, obviously there's TV is really pervasive and everything like that. The number one most popular name is not anywhere near as popular as the number one most popular name, say 20 years ago, because, excuse me, there's so much more diversity now.
Yes.
Within naming. So I don't know. I just think that's really interesting. And I want her to, you know, really love her name and, feel that it's special for her, you know, not that 50 other girls in her school have it.
Right. She can own that name.
Right.
It'll be personal to her. And, you know, and thereby she, you know, you hear about people, you know, protecting their good name, which I know, you know, has plenty of connotations that are probably not cool, but, you know, the idea of, you know, you want somebody to take pride in their name and want to be well spoken of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so hopefully, they'll guard that sort of identity. And, I think that's, you know, you made a good point about the, you know, the Catholic knowledge of the demon's name. And, mm-hmm. you know, it can be one of those things where, you know, as long as, you know, this is kind of where that nicknaming comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're hanging out with your friends, you may get all these different nicknames. And those nicknames are a way of exercising a certain amount of, I don't want to say power or control, but, you know, a certain amount of familiarity.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, and it expresses a certain relationship. And it can, you know, my wife has a very common name, but she knows who knows her based on what they call her because there's a lot of permutations of her name.
Okay, there are so many different nicknames for her name. And we have talked about she can tell when she met somebody or, like, in the course of her life based mm-hmm. on what they call her. And I think that's fascinating. I think that's so interesting.
Absolutely. And so, you know, in terms of protection magic, like, really nailing down who somebody is through their name is an important part of making a protection working work.
Mm, you know? Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break, and then I think when we come back, do you want to talk about talismans and magical attack?
Sure.
All right.
My name is Scarlett. I'm an eclectic neo-pagan witch based in Wisconsin on the shores of Lake Michigan. On my podcast, Lakefront Pagan Voice, I share my perspective on pagan topics, life, local flavor, and a few of my favorite things. I'm always learning, and I hope you'll explore with me. You can find my show on iTunes and at Podbean. And here is a cow.
If your witchcraft grows betwixt the roots and weeds of your garden,
or between the cracks of your busy life, get a cup of tea,
pull up a chair, and join us for Betwixt
and Between, a podcast of chats between
two modern traditional witches.
If you're not too busy.
And your kids asleep.
Pause, pause, pause. Cute baby noises. Dang, no, okay. Score! You totally poked the baby just to make
no,
it she, make it noise.
She coughed. What the hell?
Oh goodness. All right, so Sator arepo tenet opera rotas, right?
Right.
It's the one everybody knows. That one in abracadabra, abracadabber, abracadab,
mm-hmm.
abracada, all that.
Yep.
Where it diminishes.
Yeah.
So talismans, magical talismans. Which do you carry any? Do you are you holding?
Are you holding Caulfield? No, no, I do not. However, my husband does. I've talked about it before. It's one mm-hmm. I did for him a long time ago, before we got married. To help with a job interview, and it ended up kind of morphing into just success and luck in general. But yeah, he carries it. He puts it in his. It's like it used to be in a bag, and the bag has since disintegrated. And now it's a couple of it's stones and a coin that has special meaning to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny every time we switches jobs or really needs kind of a boost, we'll boost it with Crown of Success oil.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's been good for us so far, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever worn, I remember you talking about, in your glory days, back before you were old and mothered, like when you were in high school, like you would wear, you might have like a pentacle or something like that mm-hmm. that was discreetly,
mm-hmm.
Displayed in jewelry. Was that ever a protective symbol for you, or was it always more of a social identity symbol?
No, I mean, it was and it wasn't. It wasn't a social identity because I didn't want a ton of people recognizing it as such,
mm-hmm.
Just because I had to stay. Like back in Narnia, so far in the closet.
Right.
But as a protection, no. It was more just as a. I don't know. I can't really describe it. Just like a personal comfort thing. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my path. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I was thinking more on the social side of things. I wasn't thinking so much as like, hey, world, here I am. More of like a subtle nod to, if you know what this means.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe we should chat,
Yeah, like absolutely. That kind of thing.
Okay. That's interesting, yeah. So no, you've never really carried anything regularly for like personal protection and as a talisman?
Not protection, no.
No. It's interesting. I don't carry anything currently. I carry stuff regularly. I always am carrying some sort of a mojo bag or mm-hmm. some sort of a little doll or talisman of some kind. Very rarely is it for protection. I've carried silver before for protection, and that's probably the most potent one. Oh, and then a Rowan cross. I've carried Rowan crosses before,
mm-hmm.
which are, just for those who don't know, they are... Even armed crosses, usually made from sprigs of mountain ash or rowan. I've adapted that to be a few other types of wood as well, particularly rue and rosemary. I used to have rue and rosemary plants that I grew,
mm-hmm.
And so I would take some of their twigs, and you bind them with red yarn or thread or wool, and you'd use that around the center, sort of like you're making a god's eye, but you don't go very far. You just kind of get the very center of
mm-hmm.
it. And then you carry that. And I carry that frequently for protection. So.
You had something in your car for a while, didn't you? Was that mm-hmm. for protection?
The allspice beads?
No, I'm thinking of the little coin. Wasn't it like a mercury dime?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I have, yeah, I had a mercury. I've had mercury dimes. I think the thing you're thinking of is actually, I had an astrological talisman that I had hanging down from my rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But I have carried mercury dimes several times as talismans. That, you know, that's something that, you know, is a very easy talisman to carry because nobody really questions it. It's, you know, hidden in plain sight sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Yeah, I've definitely carried coins before. Again, not really for protection, but for, you know, for luck or for various other things. It's funny, I didn't really think about protection too much until this little goober came along. And now it's like, now, you know, 50% of my headspace is, oh God, is she dead? Did I kill her?
Oh my goodness.
That's eased up now that she can, you know, lift her own head up and roll and everything. But, you know, those first couple months are intense with the anxiety.
Yeah. You're like, I've never thought about training my dogs to be, you know, vicious to strangers, but I'm really considering it. No, it is interesting that, you know, once you have kids, it starts to enter the field a little bit more. And the personal protection is not as strong for me. Like, I'm not as concerned about myself, but I do little stuff here and there for protecting kids.
Yeah. I think we talked about that last time on how some of my fears have kind of gone away now that, you know, I'm up a lot in the middle of the night. And before, I would need lights on no matter where I went. And, you know, now I'm like, psh. That's going to hurt my eyes and wake her up. It's pitch black in there. You know, like, it has changed a little bit. You're right. It's shifted more to her now as a preservation instead of self-preservation.
Yeah. I remember early on in fatherhood and really, you know, constantly and currently, my biggest fear was home invasion, was somebody coming in while I am, you know, while I'm there specifically, while my family is there and, you know, me not being able to do something about it. And so, like, that's, you know, that's kind of the stuff that I, you know, I regularly include little rituals for home protection.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the sense of, like the witch bottles or anything like that, although those are there, but much more of, like, a, you know, just keep this house out of the glance of somebody who would consider doing something like that.
Right.
Sort of pass me by. So I do some work on that end of things. What are some other talismans that people use for protection? I'm trying to think, you know, there's so many.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess we're talking a good bit about Native American stuff tonight, but, you know, turquoise jewelry embedded in silver is a very protective talisman. And I think that's something that a lot of people have access to, wear, you know, so that's something that could be used as a talisman, I think. Can you think of any others?
No, unfortunately.
Hmm.
I feel like I should have done better research for this.
No, that's my job. I should have done some research, and I didn't.
Listen, y'all. Research will happen when she's a little bit older.
Yes. And I'm responsible for actually educating the youth of America now, so I have to be a little bit sidetracked on my research foci at this point.
I have the Element Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells by Judica Elish.
Do you want to just peek through and see if there's one or two spells that we could discuss in there?
Yeah.
Maybe that would give us just a jumping off point in terms of, like, oh, that's how that would work, and here's how it could be adapted.
Yeah, there. I was looking for something specifically for children, since that's kind of what, you know, prompted this, and there really isn't much. But there's a whole thing on body protection spells, and she says, despite fierce animals, poisonous substances, and various spiritual threats, most dangers that one potentially encounters on Earth derive from human beings. Homeopathically, perhaps, despite all the magical power inherent in botanicals, crystals, and animal allies, the most potent protective magic derives from the human body. So the first thing, I'm sorry, I'm 12, is genitals. So let's see. The most powerfully protective magic symbol is that of female genitalia. I know the cowrie shell translates to that.
Right. Yeah, there's a really old phenomenon called the Sheila na Gig, or Sheila na Gig, which I think comes out of Irish lore, and that's like they would post it above the door lintels, I think, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, and that would be, it was basically a woman sitting splay-legged with an enormous vagina front and center, like, hey, y'all, if you're coming in, but, you know, put on your coats, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm reading and listening at the same time.
That's fine.
This is interesting. She says crescent shapes are, you know, indicative of the female, which are lunar crescents, and then also horseshoes. I never really made that connection.
Yeah, usually we hear about them for luck, but it would make sense. The crescent, I think that was mentioned in an article I did on horseshoes. You know, and they're, you know, usually some sort of iron as well, so that makes sense.
Yep.
Oh, iron!
Iron is a huge one. And she actually talks about it, because, let's see, she talks about it under the menstrual blood portion, which... She's basically saying that there's a power in it, and it's quote unquote wise blood is what she says. So coral and iron share those properties because metaphysically they are understood as solidified remnants of the menstrual flow of the ocean and the earth, respectively.
Well, that's a different take on that. I like that. I think that's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I thought that was cool. I did a little read through before we started, and I was like, "Oh, okay."
I dig that.
But yeah, I do have an iron railroad spike underneath my bed.
Well, there you go. That's protective.
Yeah, we did it. Or I think you gave it to me after. After something big that we did, I was afraid of something kind of following me home.
Right. I'm sure it was summoning some sort of deep chthonic force, but...
I put that under my bed to sort of keep that safe, so...
Yeah. I've given out a lot of those... iron railroad spikes just because I used to work next to a railroad and was able to grab any of them that sort of came out of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't like pull them from the tracks.
No, no.
But like they rattle loose over time. So I'd grab them as they, you know, when they fell in the gravel and things like that. And yeah, those make really, really good protective amulets because by themselves, they're already kind of an aggressive shape and they're iron. So it's a very, you know, You ain't getting past this kind of a thing, and then like you can combine them and make an equal armed cross pretty easily.
Yeah,
you know, you can lay them out as a star pretty easily. I mean, there's just a lot you can do with them.
That's true. So. Another element which you kind of touched on, but has a lot of folklore behind it, is silver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, silver bullets and all that jazz. So I used to wear. A ring. I've worn it for like 10 years. I had to take it off when I was pregnant because my fingers got so swollen, but it was silver, and I wore that for years and years and years.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, silver, honestly, like when I think of protection, for some reason the first thing I think of, obviously tonight at least, has been silver.
Uh-huh.
As we mentioned it a couple of times, and I'm surprised I hadn't thought of iron until we got to this part of the show. Just because that's also sort of the other default, just in terms of really strong protective materials that you can find that are pervasive. I mean, they show up throughout multiple cultures. I know a lot of people say that iron keeps not just bad spirits at bay, but all spirits at bay.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be used to repel fairies and things like that.
Oh.
So, you know, and I'm not wild about scaring away all the fairies. I like fairies, mostly. Seem like good folk, as it were. But at any rate, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talismans. I mean, mirrors are another one that people use, where they'll, you know, use mirror jewelry or, you know, put mirrors up at certain places of their house to reflect, you know, negative energy as it comes in.
Yeah, like, you hear a lot about that with feng shui.
Feng shui, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of talismans. But so that kind of brings me into the next section that I think we would talk about, which would be, you know, we do have all these rituals. We do have all these things from protecting ourselves and the ones we love. How likely is it that we're going to get attacked, you know?
Right? Well, I think for me, a lot of it is, it's not so much like, okay, I believe that somebody is going to psychically or physically attack my daughter, or that necessarily something horrible is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think you have to be prepared for everything and always kind of have that in the back of your mind. At least I do. But to me, some of it is just a physical reminder of to be cautious as well. And I have this weird train of thought with everything in my life that if I think about it and I prepare for it, then if it does happen, I'll be more okay with it. You know, I'll be better prepared for it. So I tend to always think like worst case scenario, and I try to, you know, stay positive, but the pragmatic part of me kind of always tends to come out and be like, well, what if this happens though? You know? So
right.
That's kind of how I approach it, is just in case. And that way, if you're prepared for the just in case, then it might not happen, you know? Or it's more likely to not happen, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in a lot of cases, the worry is not, you know, someone summoning malicious forces to direct against you in a very pointed attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with the evil eye Malocchio and things like that, the idea is that somebody could do it very unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you might be the target of these sorts of things just by happenstance, just by somebody's sort of bad mood that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so by having these having these supernatural barriers and defenses sort of established already, you can deflect those things as they come in.
Yes.
Yes. Quiet.
Quiet. Yes.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a whole lot more to say on that. I mean, are there any other like protective things that you do? There's this one spell. I have no other way to wedge it in, but it's this one spell that I've always thought about, and I haven't done it. I have no idea why I haven't done it, because it's this one spell that I've thought about for years and years and years. And I think it's in one of the Scott Cunningham Earth Power books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really simple, and it's when your children, you know, leave the house for whatever reason for that day, you take a handful of earth and you toss it after them, but they don't see you do it.
Okay.
And that offers them protection. And like, I don't know. I just, you know, had to throw that one in there because I really love that spell. But
what is the thinking behind that?
I don't know. Like, so many of these spells, we're able to break it down.
Yeah.
Like you really wailed on that iron thing where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, solidified menstrual power of the earth goddess. That's awesome. Love that. You know, going kind of that direction with it. But then this, just tossing earth after somebody, like, it feels like it's just a way of, you know what it feels like to me?
What?
It feels like breadcrumbs.
I was about to say something along the same lines. It feels like if you, you're kind of like, entreating them to return back to the earth, like that specific plot of earth that you're telling them to come back home, then they'll return home safely almost.
Yeah, you're making sure that their road home is clear.
Yeah.
They can always
come
back.
We're on the same page. I gotcha.
Yeah. No, I like that. And I mean, that's, you know, in a lot of ways, like, I wonder. So, you know, we were talking about, like, doing these individual talismans and protections and things like that. And any one of them by themselves, I think, has some efficacy, but it's not necessarily, you know, the stopgap measure. But I think, you know, as you develop a home, it becomes imbued with this aura of safety and comfort and protection.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that your children can take like a piece of that with them in some way, or that making sure that that place exists for them to come. That's why, you know, that's why I think when there is home invasion or when there, you know, is a tornado or something like that, it feels not just like a loss, but a violation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, there's this real sense of a space that should have been forever, at least for your lifetime, and should have offered comfort and safety to those you love. You know, that being taken away from you is very, very powerful.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I just feel like, you know, as parents, especially now, like we do so much to make sure that our homes are physically safe. You know, we'll make sure that we have locks on the doors and things, and, you know, alarm systems or whatever.
Dogs,
you know, all of that. But, you know, we also add this magical layer. We just want to create this complete environment of, you know, not, I don't want to call it Fortress of Solitude because that's not at all what it is. But, you know, you're creating this environment of I don't know, this sphere of home that is always available. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm getting weirdly esoteric and rambling, I feel like.
It's okay. I will stay there for a little while.
So.
Yeah, I'm going through here, you know, just find any other things. And one thing she mentions is like doorway guardians of gargoyles.
Yes.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
Because that's something I would not have thought of.
Yes. And I don't think I use gargoyles, but I love the idea of gargoyles.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard on a modern house, particularly in a rental house, to be like, I'm open up gargoyles because your property values go down real quick.
But at the same time, they can be indoors. You know, we've got one downstairs. It sits on a bookshelf that you see when you enter the house, and I've never really thought of it as like a protection thing now. Before, but now it's like, well, that's interesting that it's right by the front door, and that's just kind of where it ended up, you know?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Yeah, and I mean, people will put like the little ones out in their gardens and things as well. I think those are great. Yeah, but it's hard to have like, you know, your gutter spout
right.
Look like a,
right.
You know, a six foot tall stone statue, you know? That might do something to you.
Oh, another one, is salt. You touched on that earlier, too, that we haven't really discussed, but, you know, like a circle of salt or just salt can kind of purify and take away.
Hey, where does salt come from?
What?
Where does salt come from? Where do you find, where can you definitely always find salt?
I don't know.
In the ocean?
Oh.
I'm just
My mind
like,
didn't go
know,
there. I was like, is this a dad joke that I'm not getting?
No. I totally set that up like it was a dad joke.
You
did. No, I got plenty of dad jokes. I'm sure you're hearing them, too.
I am.
But no, like, so is that, you know, how you're talking about the coral as the, you know, there's this feminine. It's all feminine. Ah, that's what it is. It's clicking. Ah, it's all feminine. Feminine. It's this mothering protection thing.
Yeah,
ah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So if iron is identified with a feminine force, if the coral is identified with a feminine force, if the salt is a feminine force, red brick dust obviously has menstrual connotations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the Ojo de Dios or the, you know, any of that sort of stuff, there's a weirdly, you know, quasi-feminine quality to that, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and like dream catchers, circular, round.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. We are never more protected than by a mother's love. It all comes back to Harry Potter.
Oh, it's true. Alrighty. So.
I think we've clinched that either for better or for worse. Good. So what's new with you? Anything big going on magically or non-magically you want to share?
No, I haven't had time to wash my clothes, so I have a very Velcro baby. that's what they call them. She is high needs, makes it sound really bad, but you know, and I love it, but it's very hard to get anything done. So,
yeah.
But I am kind of doing a big cleaning right now. Kind of have things, like I made a huge list of everything I need to get done, and I've started doing it, and it feels good. It feels like an uncluttering mentally as well. And I definitely intend to go through some of my like witchy books and just all my stuff that I've kind of accumulated over the years and really take inventory, I guess, and see what I have and what I have to work with and kind of what I will use and what I won't use. And I definitely intend to kind of, what am I trying to say? Just pare down and become a little bit more of a minimalist witch, I feel like.
Yeah. Get back to basics.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Go to the roots.
What about you?
No, I dig that.
What's going on with you?
Currently, like I said, teaching, which is awesome, teaching this semester. I'm doing, it's basically American religious history and culture, which is totally up my alley, and I love it. And so I know one thing I've been doing is carrying my Hajjan root into class in my pocket every day. So I'm like, just because I'm like, I need to make sure that I feel like I have some authority to talk about this.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
So I carry,
I'm sure you do, but yeah, anything to help boost your self-esteem is great.
Absolutely. And other than that, like, I'm, you know, where I'm living now, I am surrounded by a lot of insanely intense folk culture, some of which is insanely intense folk magic. So, you know, hex barn signs and things like that. I know that there's a lot of debate about, you know, are they magical, are they not? They certainly have magical elements and look magical. But hello, little baby.
We might be hitting our wall here.
Well, cool. If people want to contact us, they can do so via the website newoldwitchery.com or
there's always the email, which is compassandkey@gmail.com.
Yep. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Those links are on our webpage and in the show notes. And yeah, I think that's it. Lane, thank you so much for making time and for bringing the adorable little baby.
Thanks for putting up with some crazy noises now and then from her.
those are not crazy noises. Those are like hurt you in the feels kind of noises. It's great. I love it. Cool. Well, take care. Love to you and the whole fam.
Thank you. You too. And right. Who knows when next time will be, but hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon. And until then, thanks for listening.
Be well.